This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
But Ben Standing of The Athletic is with us, covers the Commanders, and is super plugged in this time of year with what's going on around the league. Ben, let's start with the need for an edge. And if that need is greater than basically being able to just find help elsewhere. Like, do you think they need to reach and stick at that position at 29? Or would you rather them get help at corner or somewhere else rather than reaching a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the draft as a whole that they need to figure out ways to get more help at edge. It doesn't necessarily have to be at 29. The good thing is this is considered to be a very deep group. You mentioned my colleague, Dane Brugler. If you look at his top 100 list, he has 17 edge rushers in his top 100, and when I want to say 24 through four rounds, whereas compared to cornerback, I think it's 11 and 17 offensive tackles, like between 25 and 75, I think he has two. So some positions just dry up quicker. So that would be one reason to say, you don't have to do it at 29. You can wait and maximize value. But I do think it's a position they've got to get younger. They've got to get more athletic, you know, not to mention, obviously, you know, help the pass rush, the run defense, et cetera.
Is there a spot? I've been asking everybody this, Ben, that covers the draft, and you do both. I mean, obviously, your mock drafts, you score a really high percentage every year, it seems like, and you know the team so well. Is there a position where outside looking in, schlubs like me are going, they need help there? I said that last year a bunch of times. They didn't do anything, and those groups outperformed. Is there a group that they think they're okay at that we don't?
You know, I'm sure a lot of it comes down to say things like what they think is going to happen with the guys they drafted last year. You know, Johnny Newton, Ben Sinnott, you know, guys like that, Luke McCaffrey, that we, you know, still a work in progress from our perspective. So we might look at it and say, hey, you know, you could maybe add a young tight end, or, you know, hey, you use another receiver. But maybe they may think, hey, these guys are going to be ready to go more than that. But I would just say in general, take out the obvious quarterback, I think every position's up for grabs. I mean, I would rank some higher than others. And, you know, maybe if you take tight end, that would be like a fourth tight end. I don't know if you need to do all that for this year. But honestly, other than that, I think anything's in play. I mean, I really, you know, they just got Laremy Tunsil. I would not be upset if they took right, went tackle in the first round to just continue to build up that line around Jaden Daniels, you know, for a right tackle, obviously. So, you know, and you can kind of go down the list. So I don't think, I mean, you know, again, they may have their own thoughts and so on. But like in general, I think everything's up for grabs.
Ben, I totally agree with you, but I also think if that's true, then so is what I'm about to say, which is to have that many holes or areas where you could stand to upgrade, you're not that great of a team in terms of personnel. So one of two things then must be true if I keep going down this path, which is either to say that there's a real regression possibly coming this year after the NFC Championship game, or Jaden Daniels is just that amazing that you don't need that great of a roster, and you're going to win a lot of games every single year. Where do you fall on that?
I think both of those things are true. I mean, look, this is, as we know, I think you guys remember who was in charge before Peters and Quinn showed up. I mean, they've got nothing out of those drafts for the most part. And the reason why they keep signing guys to one-year contracts is in part because they don't have – they didn't inherit much in the way of depth. I mean, what was it, like less than 20 players from the 2023 squad were on the squad last year. By the end of the season, that number diminished even more. I mean, it's what made last year so crazy. And I kept asking the question late in the season, like, are they good? Like, because, like, obviously Jaden, yes, and they played well. But, like, you could, you know, we could poke holes all over the place last year. And, you know, this year, certainly the Tunsil trade is a big upgrade at left tackle. And obviously they hope that Deebo Samuel can do the same at receiver. But everything else, you know, what else did they do that you're like, wow, that definitely got them a lot better? So I think they're still continuing to build up the roster. We're just viewing it oddly, because they went to the NFC Championship game. If they had finished what we had expected them to be, you know, 6-7 wins, I think they'd be, you know, we'd look at the roster a little bit differently. So, yeah, I do think there's a chance for regression, but at the same time, you know, who thought last year was going to happen? So at this point, I'm not going to question anything, and that, you know, in terms of what, you know, the possibilities of upside for them.
Ben Standing with us here on Grant and Danny. So what could they do tonight that would surprise you? I mean, obviously within reason, they're not taking a quarterback at 29 or something like that, but what's something that you could, you know, that you don't, that none of us are anticipating, I guess is the way to phrase it.
Well, I would be stunned if they traded up. I mean, they only have the 5 picks, and they also, not just this year, they only have 5 picks next year. So they're already in a hole there. And, you know, this doesn't feel like, I mean, look, if there's a player, you know, who they on their board is, you know, ranked 3rd best in the whole draft, and somehow he's sitting there at 23, and you're like, whoa, we got to get this guy. But, like, assuming that's, you know, not really the case, that to me would be the biggest one. Beyond that, I mean, like I said, honestly, I don't think anything would surprise me. And I'm not saying that like flippantly. I mean, this is kind of where I've been now for weeks. You know, once I really sort of dug into this group, this roster, this draft class, I think anything's in play. Obviously, again, you know, you would think edge rusher, cornerback, offensive playmaker, those would be the main priorities. So if they didn't somehow come away with any of those, you know, say through 2 rounds, that would be a bit of a surprise. But beyond that, really not much would surprise me tonight. The individual player, perhaps, but not like a position.
Ben, I'll circle back for analysis after, but just give me names. So realistically, if they took an edge at 29, your best guess at who it would be who?
Yeah, I mean, best guesses would be, you could look at Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College, you know, real bendy pass rusher, you know, 17 sacks last year, a bunch of tackles for loss. The team captain checks that box, you know, really, you know, considered to be a really hard worker. I think he's a guy, if he's there, would make a ton of sense. Nick Scorton from Texas A&M is sort of the opposite of Ezeraku to a degree, also a team captain and seems like a pretty good locker room guy, but he's not the same athlete. But he's got just relentless. He just relentlessly pursues quarterbacks, ball carriers. You know, he led the Big Ten in sacks at Purdue at 2023 before he transferred to Texas A&M. So I think those are two guys I would look at. You know, could Shamar Stewart, who dominated the combine but doesn't have a ton of production in college, could he be there? Maybe. But I think those two guys, in terms of the edge rusher types, would probably be the ones I would look at.
You're pretty resolute in reading you on this idea of the team captain thing and really feeling like that's significant. And I get that almost all their picks last year were, but it was year one of laying the foundation. I'm also a little bit leery of a 1-year sample on that. And then Peters, and actions are believable over words, obviously, but he essentially said, like, you don't have to be a team captain in his press conference as much as a good guy. I mean, sure. Do you still go pretty hard in the paint with that you think they're hunting that?
Yeah, well, I mean, one, it's not a 1-year deal because this was his deal in San Francisco. This was something I wrote about last year pre-draft, like something to keep an eye on, and then sure enough, it played out. And, you know, like, there was a couple of players where I looked and I was like, to see were they team captains, and I couldn't tell that they were, but they were listed as, like, well, yeah, some version of like a good guy award or so they won some team leader thing. So yeah, I mean, the wearing the C does not necessarily, if you don't have that, it doesn't mean you can't be considered to be a positive presence on the team. So yeah, it doesn't have to be captain per se, but obviously that was a big priority last year. And, you know, I asked Peters about this the other day, like, now that you've built up the culture a bit, is that still like something you have to do? And he said, we just want to get certain types of guys, whatever. Even in my various like mock draft, like I did one version where I did six different ways just to show different outcomes. And some of them I was very dogmatic with captains. Others I was like, all right, I mean, you know, maybe two or three, but I'm not going to like live and die on this version. So, you know, I think it's up in the air to a degree, but clearly that was a fascination or something that was important for him, not just here, but also with the 49ers.
So at what point do you think they could expand that search a little bit? I guess what I mean is it may still be early in culture building. I know 1 year doesn't necessarily define it because at some point Bobby Wagner won't be here anymore. At some point, some of these other vets that were short-term guys will move on to greener pastures. When can they start, in your mind, opening up to, and I don't mean to pick on the kid, just offer an example, a James Pierce, for example, that's now kind of falling on boards because of some off-field potential issues. When could they open it up to a talent pool like that and maybe take more of a risk?
Right. Well, I think they've already done that on the veteran side, right? I mean, not disparaging anybody, but like Lattimore and Tunsil, you know, you wouldn't view them necessarily as like team leader types. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even Debo Samuel, right? He had some, you know, clashes with people in the 49er side of things. But, you know, those veterans are typically probably some shorter term situations. And obviously the talent already exists, right? You know, that they're really good players when healthy, you know, that type of deal. Whereas with the incoming guys, you know, this is where I think they really are trying to build the long-term culture. These are the guys that are really going to be the spine of the team going forward. So I think for that, it probably stays still. But look, obviously everybody does their homework. If they think that, you know, with James Pierce, you know, his concerns are a little bit nebulous. It's sort of in the vein of how much does he really burn to play football and, you know, maybe some other things, you know, but they've got to do their homework on this. And if they say, hey, not that big of a deal, hey, either he's a heck of a pass rusher and based on talent, probably be a top 15 pick. Based on concerns, he may slip out of the first round. So, you know, I mean, I think in general, I would still stay the plan because it is only year two of this. But, I think on the veteran side, they've already loosened up based on what they brought in last year. You know, they didn't bring in, last offseason guys who were even remotely questionable. And I'm not saying the Lattimores and Tunsils and Samuels are, but just they're not necessarily team captain types.
Ben Standing of The Athletic on Grant and Danny. Going back to last year's class for a reason here, Luke McCaffrey at wide receiver. Ben Sinnott at tight end are two guys that jump out. There are others I could name. But what do we know about their confidence in those guys elevating and really becoming key contributors? Because I feel like the answer to that is significant going into their plan here. If they already know or think, and I'm not saying this is the case, I happen to really like Sinnott, but let's just say hypothetically they didn't see it and they go, well, maybe he's more Batesy than he is Ertzy. Like, this is not going to be an impact receiver in this league. Then they actually probably do need a weapon as a pass catcher that they could invest in over the years. McCaffrey, similarly, is a guy I want to get reps and opportunities and targets for, and you don't necessarily want to stunt his development. But if they don't see it, or after last year don't feel the same way as they did after a year in their building, then wide receiver is probably a much bigger need. So what do we know about how they feel about McCaffrey and about Sinnott, neither of whom they were confident enough in to ask a lot of in the playoffs last year?
Well, I would say that, you know, in the case of Sinnott, he's a tougher evaluation for me. He was an odd prospect coming in because he's more like a H-back to a degree than like your traditional tight end, and how they were going to use him was going to be interesting. And then he didn't play a ton. Like, Ertz is the pass catcher, Bates is the blocker. And I don't necessarily know that Sinnott replaces either one of them if they hadn't, you know, both those guys are free agents. So I don't quite know what to make of him yet. But that, you know, they obviously had a plan for him, and I can't imagine that anything that he did or didn't do last year has, you know, shaken any confidence in that. To some degree, same thing with McCaffrey. I mean, he was a player who only played wide receiver 2 years in college because he was a quarterback previously. I agree that to an extent for 2025 purposes, if they were to draft, say, an Emeka Ibuka in the first round or take a receiver in the second round, that could suggest something about McCaffrey. On the other hand, if you look ahead to 2026, at the moment, McCaffrey's the only receiver who's under who would be on the books. I mean, I assume Terry McLaurin's going to get an extension, but right now McCaffrey's the only guy. So they need to draft arguably some receivers just to, you know, continue to have, you know, viable options at that position. So, in other words, I wouldn't say drafting a receiver high is automatically a ding on McCaffrey, but at the same time, you know, if they think, hey, we're not worried at all, we saw the growth, he's ready to go, then that should, you know, for them make receiver a lesser priority or maybe something you just even, you know, you don't think about until like, you know, late day three.
Hey, Ben, there was a run there where two times in short order you won the basically the award for the closest mock draft prediction. Take what was that? Remind me of that.
The Huddle Report has a contest every year. I've actually won three times. Thanks for short-handing
me. My apologies. Three-time Academy Award winner, Ben Standing.
Yeah. The ladies like hearing about that award.
I'm sure that comes up on the first date, right? Right when you shake their hand. Do you have that on your Tinder profile?
I just walk around. I have a T-shirt on when I show up and just says, you know, who's your mock draft champion?
Swipe right if you like good mock drafts.
Right.
Love it.
Exactly.
Our mock draft king. So then there's pressure tonight on you, right? I mean, then a lot of people are trying to see what you're turning in.
The way I look at it, you know, I've already been approved by the powers that be. But you know, my record can't be besmirched at this point. But that said, I mean, I actually haven't. I've been like sort of okay the last few years. Ironically, the more I do this job, the worse my mock draft seem to be. I think people assume like I'm getting told the picks. I couldn't even spell source, let alone had one the first two times I won. And now I, you know, because I have to do it for my job, you know, just to get a feel for what people are thinking. Like I get more people talking in my ear and it makes it actually worse. So it's not great on that front, but yeah, obviously I spend way too much time thinking about this. Hopefully I have a good showing tonight, but you know, I'm going to give myself a little bit of a pass this year because it is so insane. I mean, just looking at some of the other mocks that are out there from some of the national folks, and it is crazy some of the changes that have happened just in the last 24 hours or so.
Ben, always great, man. Enjoy tonight.
Thanks, guys. See ya.